Blog Talk Radio.
What's up, world, and welcome to Realty Universal Radio, the fastest hour in radio, no doubt about it. I'm Randy Zachary, and this is a show about real estate, about God, about life, about giving back, about being the change in the world that you'd like to see. I'm privileged to bring to you Natalie Mullinex and Realty Universal, a company dedicated to excellence. Realty Universal is a revolution founded on a very simple principle. We believe sellers and buyers should have choices. We have been a pioneer in the menu program system. More on that, of course, a little later. Natalie Mullinex, president and founder of Realty Universal, averaged over $80 million a year in sales prior to stepping back to focus more on building Realty Universal membership network. She's an accomplished speaker, writer, consultant, trainer, and, oh, by the way, mother. She travels worldwide, literally, spreading the gospel, if you will, of Realty Universal. And now, Natalie Mullinex.
Hey, everybody. I'm so happy to be here another week, and I always say that literally. And I'm just so grateful for life and grateful for living and doing what we do. On our show, as most of you know, the people that listen consistently and a lot of our agents and brokers and the general public, is about giving back. It's about real estate. It's about life, making a difference, not just real estate. And today I am so privileged to have Richard Kinnicky in today that is wrote The Capitalist's Worst Nightmare Come True, The Crucifixion of Capital. I'm going to get into a lot of details today. Richard considers the past 30 years to have some of the most exciting times in the professions of finance, motivation, and personal transformation. He believes that the future of these industries holds unlimited potential and possibility. He has years and years of experience. While the Canadian financial industry, where Richard lives, experienced explosive growth and the fields of self-help and transformation rapidly gained acceptance and worldwide momentum, Richard found his place in that ever-evolving, expanding world. Fortunate to have an open mind, deep intuition, and a strong commitment to move ahead in his life, caring about people, he did not do what was the easiest and most expeditious. He chose to do what was right. According to a letter from his partner, Michael Lee Chin at AIC, Richard strongly agreed with Michael on this point. Your reputation is absolutely vital to your success. Richard's other mentors include Napoleon Hill, Bob Proctor, Brian Tracy, Tony Robbins, Eckhart Tolle, Deepak Chopra, John Templeton, Peter Kundal, Peter Lynch, Warren Buffett. He learned how to follow the examples set by those who are considered some of the absolute best in their areas of expertise and exemplify honesty, dedication, ethics, and commitment. And the people we just mentioned have done this for years and years and years and years and years. And some, you know, aren't alive anymore, and some are. And it just shows that they've stuck with it, never changed that part of their personality or their work. These individuals continually seek to differentiate themselves from the crowd by being examples of living according to the highest degree of personal values and integrity. Richard integrates those values into his own life and passionately shares the principles with his family, friends, and clients. So when his book, The Capitalist's Worst Nightmare, Come True, The Crucifixion of Capital, there's so much more to what it sounds like it is. He's not saying give up everything. He's talking about a way to live and enjoy life, but still not be chasing the dollar, not be trying to keep up with the Joneses. It's I love it. And then came the crash in 2008. Richard knew there had to be a better way. With his financial and life background, he came up with a better way. And that, hence, is how the capitalist's worst nightmare come true, the crucifixion of capital, was born. And I am so excited to spend this next hour, which I know is going to go by too fast. We probably need 2 or 3 hours, and we'll love to have Richard come back and go through how this is, what he's suggesting, and where to go from here. So without further ado, I'd like to welcome Richard Kinnicky. Hi, Richard. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Natalie. Absolutely wonderful to hear your voice again.
I hope you had a great holiday season and a fantastic new year. And I could tell by our initial conversation just before we started this interview that things are continuing to move forward. So great to hear from you.
You too. And the last, I think the last time we were on was with our scientist friends, right, about a year ago. And it's just, it's really great to have you on. I know you're really swamped and doing your passion. And I'm, this is perfect timing. We're in a world right now that I've never in my life, and I've been around a while, I've never seen so much anxiety on all fronts with the COVID, with the, you know, in the U.S., you're in Canada, around the world, and I'm hearing it constantly. And people are scared. So let's, tell us what, we have your background, and tell us what you want to tell us about that, bringing us to the point of, does our financial system work, you know?
Yeah, well, just to very quickly answer that question, yes, the financial system does work. The unfortunate part of that answer is that it works for a very small component of our world population. And unfortunately, the majority of people really don't understand the system, and hence they are in a continuous reaction with regards to the different things that are going on. And fear and confusion and misunderstanding of certain words like risk, perhaps, and understanding what exactly these words really truly mean, then we find ourselves molded into an environment whereby we can't look far enough in the rearview mirror to see when it all started getting together. And I think that the whole thing is this, is that when we look around ourselves and we look at the splendor of the different things that we have within our eyes vision, we know one thing, and so many people have said it before me, but thoughts become things. And hence,
yes,
right now and for the last 500 years, we've had thoughts about the way the financial business runs, and unfortunately there are not very many people out there who, if you will challenge those thoughts.
Mm-mm.
And given the fact that this monopoly game has gotten out of hand, we've heard about, or many people perhaps have maybe not heard, but it's an interesting fact that BlackRock and Vanguard, who are two of the largest money management companies in the world, they're bordering on, they say within the next 5 to 10 years, that they'll own everything on the planet.
Really?
And that, yeah.
No, I haven't.
And you can,
wow.
Yeah, there's a great little, in fact, it's not little, but there's a great show on YouTube, a video on YouTube. It's called Monopoly. I don't know if it still exists. Actually, I'll just get Cigna to pull it up and see if it's still available. It's called Monopoly, and it talks about the different organizations that truly run, from a financial perspective, the world. And at one level, it's very exciting because I guess you could say with Vanguard and BlackRock being able to, in essence, acquire most all assets in the world, I would suggest that the monopoly game is almost over. And I wait with great anticipation, and hopefully my idea becomes a seed, if you will, for a new way of thinking, because we need a new way of thinking to move our civilization forward. We can't be told that we can't do something because there's not enough money in the budget to do something, when especially
right,
the survival of humanity and the world is depending on that at these particular points in time. So, yeah, it's a great video. It really points things out. But at the same time, it also should reinforce in each and every one of us the amazing connection that we all have, if you will, with the Holy Spirit. And I call the Holy Spirit the great brain tank in the context of what we need to do, and what so many people are finding these days is that they want to do what they were born to do. And yet society keeps pushing us into, you've got to do this and you've got to do that. And how many people are out there, you know, working at jobs that they can't stand just to do, you know, at nighttime or on weekends, the job that they love? And many people are out there. Yeah.
It's almost like a rat race. Yeah.
Well, that's what it's become. Absolutely. And survival in the context of, you know, financial survival, in America, we've been very lucky because after the Second World War, if you will, capitalism exploded. And the race to become the richest has never been more fierce. And yet at the same point in time, I would question from the standpoint of, if you will, God's intentions for each and every one of us, I would sincerely believe that I don't think God's intent was for us to compete on the list of the richest people in the world.
I totally agree. And when we leave this earth, we do not take it with us, do we? You don't take it with it, you're gone.
Exactly.
And they show, you know, it's such a system that's been set up a lot of people take jobs. I used to say it's just over broke, but I say that not to be negative, because when people are stuck in it, you know, when they work on their own, they're able to have their own schedules, work at what they love. And it's a lot of people just don't know how to do it, just like you said. And we're trained almost. It's almost like we're trained from a young age to go get this degree and go put your job applications out and go do this and this and this. Now, I was always an entrepreneur and I didn't have anybody do it for me. But so we all have different drives, but I believe God does give us each those talents. That's why some people sing beautifully. Some people love music, right? Other people love art, math, you know, we all have different talents. And I think each of us know, if we listen, we inherently know what we love to do. And what you're saying, it's not about just not working, not striving, not bettering ourselves, right? It's not like, let's just all quit everything. It's really finding a better way to live and collectively say, hey, stop this. You know, I was reading through your book and, you know, again, stop this. Don't, you know, we've got a situation that we're being told what to do, how to do it, when to do it, and the system is not working. Why do we do the things we do? It's just because of our training, basically, right? We don't know a better way.
Well, and you know something, Natalie, unfortunately, that's a very simplistic way of, you know, me being in agreement, because we've been doing things, in essence, sort of the same way for generation upon generation. And when we start to really take a look at it, so for example, one of the most fun chapters that I wrote in my book was called The Lie and How the Banks Work.
Yes.
And, you know,
yes.
we all talk about financial literacy. And the industry, of course, in America is amazing, because we have our self-regulatory organizations that dictate what's acceptable from the standpoint of advisors to advise their clients, and they also must know about the business themselves. And what I'm starting to recognize, substantially, unfortunately, but what I'm starting to recognize is that the bankers really don't want you to know how the bank actually works and makes its profits. And in my book, in chapter 4 and on page 83, I don't know if you have a copy of the book there. There's a very simple little graph there. And if you don't mind, maybe we'll take a moment and we'll just explain to all the listeners how the banking system truly works.
Where we make and one, we'll, they get $1 from us, and then, yes, let's do that. Let's do that. So it's 4%.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I'll let you do it. Yeah.
Okay. So let's say the average individual has $100 and they want to put that money away for 1 year. And they want that money to be guaranteed because they don't want to lose their money. So they immediately speak to their bank teller or their representative at the financial institution, and that person suggests, well, let's put this money away for a year, and we have an investment vehicle that'll pay you 1% for that money for the 1 year, and it'll be fully guaranteed. And of course, you've gone out and looked at, you know, a number of the other financial institutions, and you agree that 1% is a fair amount because that's what everybody else is paying you for your money. And then the bank goes out, and in their wisdom, they find an individual that they can lend that money to. So they're looking for somebody who wants to borrow $100 for a year. And therefore, the exchange really at one level is just a cross, but at the same time, the bankers step in and to make sure that the money is guaranteed, they scrutinize your job, your income, they scrutinize your debt service ratios and all of these other calculations, and you know them, Natalie, because you're in real estate, so you understand the concepts of money there.
Right.
So all of a sudden, we now are at the end of that year, and the borrower comes in and says, well, here's the $4 that I borrowed from you at 4%. And the bankers give the original depositor their $100 back. And we ask ourselves, okay, well, how much did we make? What was the rate of return? And most people, and I'm talking about even professionals and financial professionals, always tell me 3%. And the simple reality is that's not what they're getting. They're getting 300%.
Huge.
Now think about it this way. I paid you $4 to borrow money. You paid out $1 and you kept the other three. So that's a 300% rate of return instantaneously given that example at the bank.
Right.
And then we have something called
much higher.
So now we have something called fractional reserve banking, which means that we only need to keep 10 cents of every dollar on deposit, which actually multiplies that 300% return by another 9 times. So now we're at 2,700%.
Oh, my gosh.
And then when you actually break that 90-10 rule up and you keep going down, you actually can get with minuscule numbers all the way to approximately 6,500% rate of return on that money.
That's crazy.
And that's why there's no risk.
We don't realize it. Right.
And Natalie, that's why there's no such thing as risk in the investment business. Okay? But we're wired to believe that there is risk. We're going to lose our money, or if we don't invest our money, we're going to lose our money, and yet they say that, but they don't understand the way the mechanism is designed. And here's the worst part in the context of how governments are involved, because the individual who received that $1 of interest as a return on their money, they have to pay taxes on that money.
Right.
And most people
right.
are going to pay anywhere between 35% and 50% in tax. And yet the bankers who own the banks, who share in the profits, they receive something called a dividend. And they can make all sorts of money free of tax or minimizing their tax in comparison to those who are not looking or considering what I call the after-tax component, because that's the most important component that there is. It's not how much money you make on your money. It's how much you get to keep after you pay your taxes. And again, people are not being taught, if you will, those are the most important considerations when, number one, choosing a financial advisor, one that can really teach you how to do this stuff. And yet, at the same time, we are, if you will, in fear because we still really don't know how it operates and runs. And we look at the discrepancies, right? And we see all of these really well-to-do people driving all sorts of expensive cars, and rightly so. I mean, I'm not trying to take away capitalism in
sure.
the sense of what promotes it. But at the same point in time, we have 8 billion people. We have a problem with global warming. We have problems with energy distribution. We're having problems with soil remediation. And John and James talked about that with us last
mm-hmm.
time. Now I'm speaking to healthcare professionals who believe that we should have no-cost healthcare systems. I'm talking to people about education. And I have connections in South Africa and in Scandinavia and other countries. And they're looking at my book from one perspective and one perspective perhaps alone, but it's the creative aspect of how did you come up with this idea? What caused you to step out of the box and think about something else? And I can only go back to one thing, and I can suggest that Tesla gave us the answer, because we get vibration, frequency, and energy, and when we understand it, So my simple explanation for that is the thought that we receive is a vibration from God or the Holy Spirit or whatever we want
right.
to call it. And then
right.
that goes into our mind. It vibrates in our mind, and it connects all the different dots, and your fingers type on the keyboard, okay, and the end result is the ink goes out on the paper from that thought that we got from God. So for me, that's a very, very powerful position to be in, because if we're actually listening to ourselves, and we talked about this a little bit before the show, but if we actually truly listen to ourselves and eliminate the thoughts that are not worthwhile, and we start doing that with ourselves and we start doing that with other people, all of a sudden, instead of this 15-second attention span offered by Instagram and some of these other places, we actually have time to talk and have a discussion about things that people can understand. And when they understand them, they can become empowered.
Exactly, exactly.
So I just want to quickly jump back. Right now,
okay.
that video clip called Monopoly by somebody named Tim Geelan. Tim Geelan, G-I-E-L-E-N, who owns the world is the question on this presentation. And the website to check that out is www.stopworldcontrol.com/monopoly. And you should be able to find that. Unfortunately, YouTube has removed it since the last time I was looking at it. But
Are
in any
serious?
Event, it's, yeah.
Okay.
And again, yeah. it's something that, you know, the powers that be don't want you to know, because every
Not
time, for example, yeah. I tell people how a bank works, all of a sudden we have more people who want to buy shares in the bank. And I'll tell you the horror story. If everybody became financially literate from the perspective of my definition, okay,
right.
the world would automatically just change, because nobody would put their money on deposit. Everybody would want to be a shareholder and share in the profits. But if they weren't putting the money in for the bankers to lend out, guess what? The game is shut.
Exactly. Exactly.
Exactly.
No, totally. But it makes so much sense. I mean, look at credit cards and other. It's just so sad what's happening. Without
yeah.
anybody realizing what's happening. It's way out there.
And you know, Natalie, because you and I are both, in essence, a part of the financial system, one of the things that we've been brought up to believe is all the rewards for the hard work. And that's one of the biggest objections in the context of applying time equity on an equality basis, because there are always going to be overachievers. So
right.
the question becomes, how do we deal with those overachievers, and how do we, in essence, how do we help them recognize their achievement and their success when we're living in a world that promotes material success and consumer-driven success instead of internal success? I mean,
I totally agree.
Imagine.
I want to get into your. I want to get into the solution is time that you talk about. But right before that, since we're on the money and the banks and this, and you're you're an expert in financial advisor. You've been for years and years and years. What do you suggest people to do? Because you know there is a good way to borrow money and leverage your things. Because some people won't even be able to do anything if they can't go get some money, right? You know, some people they need to leverage and learn how to do it. What is a simple way that you would say to somebody, hey, start doing this or start doing that, and don't have total fear of ever getting a loan? You know, they say it's when you're the lender, you're a servant to the lender when they're using us and using the money, et cetera, but leveraging can also be good. So that's a side note, and I want to get back around to time and what you're doing.
Yeah, no, and let me just support you in the context of that. You know, being in real estate, one of the things that you and I will both agree on, that we need to be prudent about the ratio to which we borrow.
Right.
And if we're doing, you know, conventional mortgages where you put 25% of the property value down and you borrow 75%, so your leverage is 3-to-1, and it can pretty much, from a historical perspective, it can absorb, a 10-15% reduction in the value of the property. But the biggest
right.
problems come from the real estate speculators who are constantly just driving the market up with nothing but emotion backing that. And subsequently, some people are jumping in to buy a house and they're putting as little as 5 and 10% down on a property and borrowing the rest. And one small drop in the value of the property or consequently one small rise in interest rates can have a dramatic effect when everybody has a million-dollar house in America. And, you know, they all put down $250,000 and they borrow $750,000. It's like, wow, you know, how much money do you have to earn safely to be able to put that, you know, to pay off your house over a 25-year period? And it's, you know, when we think about it at one level, you're spending more than half of your life paying for a place to live. And you know, the perspective is you go to school till you're 25, you work from 25 till you're 65. According to, you know, global standards of longevity, you're living till, let's say, 75. It sounds like you're working, you know, four times longer to be able to enjoy one 10-year time frame in your life. And that's not what we're here to do. We're not here to just work our faces off. And when we remove profitability from the equation, so in other words, if we remove profitability, the only way that we can do that, in essence, would be to build better products. And then we can put, if you will, pride back into the building of different things, because I'm sure you might remember, but I do, in the sense that when I was a kid, we were using stoves that were, you know, 40 and 50 years old, and maybe they got chipped or whatever, but the function of the stove was amazing, and they worked for decades. Now we have planned obsolescence, which, in my opinion, is one of the dirtiest tricks. It's one of the dirtiest tricks capitalism can play on people.
It's terrible. Yep.
Yeah.
Things start breaking down. Remember, years ago, everything could last longer: cars, washer dryers, you know, your heat pumps, your, you know, furnaces. Now they do have the functional obsolescence in it, and they just on purpose, and it just doesn't last that long. It's sad that they can make it that way and that people buy into it. You know, it's just.
And it's only sad because people don't want to look at what's outside of the box of traditional education. Because when we actually start to look at these and start really asking ourselves questions about what we are doing, well, I can tell you one thing for sure, that there's a better way coming. And not only is it coming, it's accelerating because our planet is dying. We need serious attention, and having money issues is not one of those attention things. I look at my book as a hub, as a spot in the middle, and it has spokes that come out from that hub which are important to society. And I'm not sure, in the sense of the question that you asked before about who would run the show, but I will tell you, without a monetary system, we would have integrity and we would have transparency because, number one, lobbying is probably one of the...
Terrible.
It's a horrible thing to consider that you buy your way into politics when the majority of people believe that we're trying to vote you in or out of government. And, you know, being voted out of government is not a very popular thing today.
No, but it is so true. I mean, it really is. We're leveraging. We've got a mess on our hands. And I love your book because, you know, it's called The Capitalist's Worst Nightmare Come True, The Crucifixion of Capital. And you can get it on Amazon. You can get it on Kindle, you know, several places. It's such a great read, and it won't take you that long to read it. What you're saying makes so much sense, and we need to light that candle. People need to become aware. There's so many people that are so under so much anxiety, especially with COVID, and we see it where most people are worrying about, how do I pay my bills? What am I doing about retirement? What about the kids' college? You know, it's just such a backwards way that we've been pigeonholed into. And your book really explains quite a lot about how to do it. So tell us about the Great Reset. How is time so much more important than money, and what your thoughts are on that, where you talk about a 35-hour work week, spiritually, you know, everybody really looking at, you know, doing what they love to do, but everybody being more equal. When I was reading, I thought, well, is that kind of socialism? And it's not. So tell us a little bit about that.
Absolutely. Thank you so much. And thank you for mentioning the book. And for the listeners to your show, I'd like to extend to them a freebie, a gift, if they would like. If they send me an email to richard@richardpiernicki.com /author, if they put their, I'm sorry, tell me.
Richard M. Kernicki.
Yes. So my apology. Yeah. Just go to richardmkernicki.com/author. And there's a place that you can sign up for a free, a complimentary digital copy that we're happy to mail out to all of your listeners so that they can, if they want, find out what the system entails and how potentially speaking this can be a way of the future. And I will say it doesn't appeal to everybody, but I'm not worried about everybody. My objective, okay, like an artist or a musician, some people are going to love my work and some people aren't. But in the famous words of my good friend, and he said, and I can't think of his name, sorry, Natalie, but he said that bad press, good press, it doesn't make any difference. Just give us the press.
Yeah, and what you know what I love about with everything is you know in your book you quote JFK, and he says problems cannot be solved by the cynics and skeptics whose minds are limited to the obvious reality, you know, by obvious realities. So people really need to start thinking out of the box. They need to start, you know, and you know, I'm an avid entrepreneur, so I always have gone against the grain and wanted to serve and do what's supposed to be right. And everybody thinks if you're in real estate, you must be rich, but they don't realize that when you're serving, you're giving and giving, it's not about the money, and you give back a lot of money. It's not always what people think, you know. And you know, driving those cars until they run into the ground is a great idea, but so many people do not want to do it because they're concerned with what people think. And I your book really talks a lot about this great reset. You've got solutions in there as well. And when I was first I thought, are you talking about bartering? Like we've bartered for years, but it's not exactly bartering either. It's kind of
Let me jump right into the mechanism. Okay. Now the mechanism, and I'll just for clarity's sake, okay, it's not to be confused with the Great Reset, because that's all about the World Economic Forum, and that's all about the United Nations Agenda 2030, where they are expecting that we will own nothing and be happy, and there'll be no money or no currency in the world. So at one level, it sounds diabolical, but at another level, as an example, that system can easily accommodate a time system. But they're not going to allow that to happen, because when time becomes the system, material success becomes rather irrelevant, and especially if we start to continue to expand out. So let me just tell you a little bit about time equity and how it simply it compares to capitalism is, number one, time is a universal or a God law. It's not something that mankind made up. The sun comes up and goes down. We have 13 full moons every year. The natural order of our planet is, if you will, in a different time set calendar. And why all of this stuff is really important to understand is because we don't believe that some of these things have ever been challenged. So as an example, I was made aware of a thing called the 13-month 28-day calendar. And when I was working on my on the book, on the chapter that sort of details some of this stuff, I was working with a gentleman, Dave Ashworth, and RIP, wherever you are, Dave. But he passed away as we were finishing off some of the highlights of some of the ideas that we're presenting to the financial community. And one of the things I looked at him, I said, have you ever heard about this 13-month, 28-day calendar? And he looks at me and he says, oh, God, yeah. As an accountant, I can tell you there's lots of businesses that still run on that system. And I thought, wow, I've never heard anything about that. And, of course, that caused me to do some research. And as I went into deeper and deeper research about the concepts of time, I can tell you this. that there have been time pioneers who have gone to the United Nations, namely when it was still the League of Nations in 1932, and the League appointed or actually approved a 13-month, 28-day calendar, and it was supposed to be launched on January the 1st, 1933, and the Vatican came in to the UN and shut them down and said, no, you're not going to do this.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
And you can find it. It's all documented in various books and things of that nature. But the UN's major drive, Melanie, according to my understanding, is about peace and the ability to live in harmony. And one of the things that they're not paying attention to is the financial stress. So once you remove the financial stress and we remove the considerations of where you're going to live, what you're going to eat, and just the very basic things that we're stressed out about, future education, paying for hospital bills, you know, taking a vacation, doing all of these things that we do. And at one level, I would say that those are the dreams and the things of everybody on the planet. And yet, at the same point in time, what we're doing is we're kind of not being able to look at some of these other considerations. So as an example, time comes into play by the fact that it's a God-created system, and it's not manipulable. You can't manipulate it.
Right.
And the financial system is 100% manipulated all the time to meet, okay, the so-called knowledge that they need to keep fooling the people. But when we have a time-based system, time is transparent. And through that transparency, we can start to recreate trust, trust in each other, trust in humanity. Once we start having trust, we can start creating equality, because at the end of the day, the scriptures, the charters, other places tell us we're equal. And yet at the same point in time, equality really does not exist from a capitalistic or a financial perspective. And we all have, as an example, a vision of the language that we use, which is kind of funny, because if you go and you look up the word value, the value is defined by the amount of wealth. And if you go and you find wealth, then it tells you how much money you have. And then you go to money, and it really doesn't tell you anything about the other two. So technically, we're making the biggest thing in the world, okay, the fact that we really know nothing, okay, about the way this system works. So we have all of these stresses and anxieties. And then when we add to that a 13-month, 28-day calendar where everything becomes more normal from a time perspective, excuse me, we're now coming back into a more relaxed perspective. And, of course, those are the mandates for the UN, but they don't want to look at it because of the people who are in control at the UN. So, hence, any really good ideas, okay, and we discovered this and we talked about this last year with John Rosebush, the reality very simply is he has a challenge before the United Nations to prove how his power invention works, and yet nobody is really interested in finding out. And it's such a shame that we allow these major corporations to dictate to us, okay, which way everything is going to run. And I know it sounds crazy, but there are lots of different ways for people to actually be able to take control. But before they take control, they need to stand united over, you know, a strategy or a system or an idea. And that's what I've done with the capitalist worst nightmare. I've planted a seed. I've dropped a pebble. And now the ripples or the tree is growing, whatever way you want to express that. The simple reality is that the message is slowly getting out there that there are alternative ways. And it's not just in the financial part. It's in every part. We need a revamping of education, healthcare, you know, soil, water. I mean, basic human necessities, okay, we're not going to be able to supply future generations. And it's very saddening and disheartening that, you know, these things that we dream of in the context of success, that's only because that's the way that we've been brought up to believe. For example, another person that I look at is a guy named Infinite Waters, and he's talking about, you know, diving deep and getting into different things. And he just talks about the fact that, do we really need all this stuff? and who are we, and what is the purpose of our lives, and what is it that we're trying to do? And I know, you know, from the thousands of people that I speak with, it's absolutely amazing that all of us really want the same thing at the end of the day. I mean, yes, there's a small proportion of people who want everything, and there's a small proportion of people who don't want anything, but the majority of us, as long as we are comfortable and we have time to spend with our families, these are the more important things to be able to really consider and enjoy life, is the time that we have. And yet, because time can lead to the transparency, it can lead to the trust, it can lead to equality, and once we have those factors, we can actually have a true democracy. And once we have
it's
a true democracy,
yeah.
Okay,
right.
Then guess what? We have a whole different scenario that can appear before us, and we can really, truly start to drive the world in the direction that we want it to go. I posed this question. I'm not sure if it's a great idea to post it on national radio, but one of the things that I suggest is nobody goes to work for a month. Okay,
right.
Nobody goes to their work. Just, you know, you can pick any company that you'd like to interject in here, or you can pick the whole thing. But if nobody went to work for an entire month, do you think the power and the control would switch to the people that didn't show up? I mean, imagine all of these different companies. Yeah. So you see, it's really easy to do. But we just have to get the people together.
I agree, and I think if a lot of people didn't watch the media that's like 90% negative, and it could be switched around to be 80% positive and 20% negative, but it isn't. It's like 90% negative and 10% positive if we just didn't watch that for a while, because it really does get down to mindsets and people and what people believe and what they're used to, and the change can come from that. And it's interesting, I find, when people do have time, they become more creative rather than in that anxiety spot, because mindsets are so crucial, right? And it's a fact that when you're in the anxiety stress position, you're not thinking as clearly, thinking as well. And I like on page 105 in your book, you said, time is more valuable than money. With time, you can create money, but with money, you cannot create time. And that's really
well put. And that's the beauty of it, yeah.
Yeah, because all we have is a lifetime. It was another, I think, Henry Pollins in your book. You quoted him saying, "Is all we have is a lifetime." It is true, and you pull back and you go, "Wow!" Like, how many of us get older and go, "Why did I do this, God? Tell me why I did this." But then we do know, you know, if we have the drive to go do it. It's just really interesting. I think knowledge is definitely power. You talk about the Black Swan book. Is it written by Nassim Nicholas Taleb? He wrote that. You were saying he wrote that what you do not know is much you need to know. It's more important than what you do know, you know, because all of us can learn something from somebody, right? And it's interesting what's given to us for free. You walk outside, you see the beautiful birds, the animals, the sky, everything. And when we were on the show with John and James, of course, they were talking about how we're polluting, you know, with the CO2 and in the waters and things. And we really need to wake up. Some of the problems with us waking up, though, when we have the people that are overseeing it and only caring about the money aren't going to wake up. And then there's also some things being done that are so drastic that it can't work either, because we'll just cut off too much. You know what I mean? It's just, it's a real tough, delicate act, and I do believe, I love your book, because with enough people saying, no, I'm not going to buy the new car right now, or, you know what, I'm not going to put all my money in the bank because I want to see how I can, you know, make it work better. A lot of people have fear and go into just only safety. You brought up, I'm talking, because we have about 15 minutes. That's the only, like I said in the beginning, we need about 2 or 3 hours with you. We really do, because there's just so much to go. There's so much to go over. It's like, well, you were talking about a 35-hour work week, and everybody benefits, and then also about agreements. And tell us a little bit about how that would work. Are people doing what they love, or everybody's got to say? But a part of it can sound socialistic, right? Like if everybody's making the same amount of money, but then it's not. So I'm not sure how that works.
Okay, so here's the one little piece, because you keep bringing into the conversation the aspect of money, and the book eliminates money. So I'd like you to start considering thinking about that in a real practical sense. And the best way that I've been finding is to ask people to take this into consideration. Pretend that they woke up in a world that didn't have money. And remember yourself as a child, okay, that for the most part, in my experience, I can't speak for all around the world, but most people in North America, from my experience, they woke up and they came out of a nice warm bed. They had at least some kind of shelter. There was something to eat. There was running water that they could drink. And we have this, if you will, this basic primal sort of enjoyment in life. And then we switch that because we want to buy things. And in order to buy things, we've got to go to work. And if we go to work and the job is all about creating the profits, and by creating, you know, artificial profits by using things like we talked about, planned obsolescence, then all of a sudden we have this really crazy thing going on where we're going to work to fund our lifestyles, but we don't have a lifestyle because all we do is go and work. So if we take profits out of the equation, if we're not building anything to make money on it, we can go back to the pride of America, the pride of Canada. I used to see stickers on, you know, everything in the sense of our material world, proudly built in the United States. Where are those stickers today? I'm sure half the population that's going to work today that's building stoves that last for 5, 6, 7 years, I'm sure that those people would rather build a much more high-quality product and only have to go to work 4 hours a day to build that high-quality work, because we don't need to make a profit. We don't need to sell 899,476 stoves next year.
That makes total sense, yeah.
When we start to think about those things, and thank you for saying that it makes sense, because it's the truth. These are the things that when you really sit down at the end of the day, if you ask yourself on your deathbed, hey, if I had $10 million, would I be able to buy back an hour of my time to go and say sorry to somebody that I hurt, or to give somebody an extra kiss and a longer hug? Okay? That's not going to happen when we're on our deathbed, because no matter how much money you have, and despite some of the, you know, the people who think they can buy their way into heaven, It just kind of tells you where our real society is. And, you know, I was alluding to, and I was alluding to what Deep Waters was saying, and I missed finishing my sentence there, but he talked about the simple fact that television is a tell lies vision. Okay, so it tells lies visionary. And we don't understand, because we're caught up into other people's lives on TV. And to be really honest with you, the people that they make their sitcoms, we're trying to find enjoyment in our life, but we're looking at other people to find that. And our enjoyment in life, Natalie, comes from our internal perspective. It's the love of our children. It's the love of our families. It's the love of a dog. You know, it's the love of beer, maybe. I don't really know where it stops and starts. But really, at the end of the day, we are being so manipulated in the context of the abuse of our time that we don't really have time to think about. Time is the most important consideration that we have. And if we could increase our own free time by 50%, there would be so much else going on, because people would spend more time with the old people. There would be more time to think about how we can work. You know, you sit back and you read Socrates, or you read Plato, or you read Nicholas Taleb, and you read all of these other motivators and people who have brought common sense to our world. And yet, our world is in the sad state of affairs that it is, because maybe those books portray something we don't think we can accomplish. And yet, at the same time, look at what we are accomplishing. So if we go back to the analogy of waking up in the morning and not having a requirement or a need for money, how fast would it take you to recognize that I'm going to come in and I'm going to sell you capitalism? So you have everything that you need, and I'm going to walk in and say, hey, we've got this thing called capitalism, and we're going to exchange these little silver things, okay, or these other paper things for your time, and you're going to go and do this and this for that. And we would look at them and go, excuse me, what are you trying to pitch?
Right, exactly.
Okay, we would not accept it. Nobody would accept it. If everything that you needed was there, love, partnership, equality, the ability to understand what is my gift and finding that gift and having the education system that drives that change, we need one generation and the whole system will change completely. And I know 100 years from now, there will never be a thing. They'll laugh at people who became multi-billionaires because they exchanged their time in life for money. And that's not my decision. I'm happy that they're all billionaires, and I'm happy that they're happy, and I'm happy for anybody who, as long as it is that they are happy. But the
right.
question becomes, what are the things that do make us happy? And I'll tell you something. I've never heard anybody in the 12 years, the 13 years that I've been working on this book, I don't ever hear anybody saying to me, oh, Rick, I really wish I could work an extra 10 hours a week.
Yeah. I totally agree with you, but I do think people, when they're working, and you mentioned something before, I've heard you mention it, not today, but about their, maybe it was in one of your interviews I listened to, that, you know, when people are doing what they love, they can be working and doing what they're love serving, but not making money and still loving it, you know, they just, because you're
Absolutely.
On a mission, you're in purpose, and that's heaven, that's really nice. It's
you know, and,
yeah, I think,
and go ahead, Natalie.
No, I know. I totally agree with you. It's just I know a lot of people are saying, okay, now how do we do this? How do we do this? We love it, but we need to, you know, how do we do it? And that's the,
so
I know you wrote.
There's a dozen different ways that we can get noticed. And the most peaceful ones are the most appealing to me. But at the same point in time, it's starting with something. And whether it's my book or whether it's the stand that individuals take, the bottom line is, while we're still in a capitalist system, we can actually thrive on, if you will, creating the truth, so the truth will be known, and hence adjustments can be made and the system could be better. And I don't know how to equate that to the concept of greed. So my thoughts are, it would just be a lot easier to eliminate capitalism and all of the other isms, and to point to a time-based system and put all of our efforts into that type of system. And I have to tell you, I love Gene Roddenberry, the originator of the Star Trek series, because in one of the movies, the Enterprise crew, they go back in time to a place where this guy who built the warp drive system, and he was the first encounter with aliens, and he asks the crew of the Enterprise who came back in time before they finished their mission, he says, how much does it cost to build a spaceship that like yours can go back in time? And they looked at the guy and they said, listen, in the 24th century, we don't need money. Money has actually become a retardant in progress. And
it
doesn't allow humanity to unleash its full unleashed potential. And I think that's where we're at. I think we could be so much further ahead as a species. We need it. We need to get clean water. We need to have clean energy. We need to be able to start to move people to other planets and explore space travel, because otherwise some of this stuff is never going to change, and we need some drastic change.
I agree. This has been, yeah, I totally agree. It's it does need drastic change. I one last thing, because we're ready to sign off on Moose, is it's been wonderful. You said to have agreements, like there were, I think, 7 agreements you wrote in your book, and one was agreement to eliminate money, rebuild confidence, basic need, have people have basic needs for food and water, productivity, I guess, in what they do the best, right, what they want to do, what makes their heart sing, because less anxiety. They won't worry about, like, saving and doing this and this and this. They know they can just create and live and peace. And then the New World Order part, I didn't, that was a different agenda in there. I'm not sure at the end. So I don't know how we're going to do that, but it's really,
well,
you know,
the first thing,
there's so much trust. There's so much trust that's, you know, we have to get to, right?
Yeah. And again, this is why, from my perspective, the time concept, if it was initiated all at one time, so to speak, and we had enough people around the world that would say, yes, this is the way that we need to go into the future, and then stopping working, or everybody going to the bank and becoming shareholders in the bank, or, you know, there's so many other ideas that we could all unite over, so that we're not creating anything but a peaceful, I don't want to call it a revolution, but a peaceful reawakening for humanity to really recognize that we're all here as brothers and sisters, you know. And you brought up a really touchy subject for me, like the United, you know, the U.S. defense budget is like $800 billion. To think that we can't use that money in better ways. And again, unfortunately, that's not for me to decide. But I will say this, we most of us, when we compare from a heart perspective and we listen to our hearts and we try to understand the good of what it is that we're doing here, it's not going to take long for people to figure out that the monetary system should be replaced, and it should be replaced with a system of time. And we have all of the technological tools that can help make that happen. So, for example, how do we monitor everybody's time? Let's use blockchain. Let's put a,
okay,
you know,
so Chris,
a watch,
okay,
or a cell phone, and you go to work and you click on your cell phone, and it logs your work time so that you can benefit for all the other things. Technologically, we already have the technology. There's already people who are growing in an environmental area. And in fact, with a time-based system, the amount of new jobs that would be created through new industry, because we need to change the way that we're doing things like recycling batteries. I saw a horrible picture the other day of windmill blades being buried in the ground in some country.
Mm.
And it's like, we can't take these things apart, so we're going to go and hide them when they stop working. You know,
that's not good.
These contradictions in our lives really aren't going to continue to work. We've got to learn how to stop fooling ourselves. And when we do, we can really get down to the serious matter of making this world work for everybody. And that's what democracy is. It's a system for everybody. And I hope that all of the people who favor and trust in the fact that we can do this, read the book. Go out and talk to your friends, because we can change. We can make the change, and we can make a better change than what has been presented to us up until now. So it's just unleashing our potential, and would love to be back on your show anytime if
you
want to discuss
any particular chapter. We need you for 2 or 3 hours.
I'm more than happy, Natalie.
I'd love to get you on a webinar, telesinar, too, you know, because we get out to a lot of people that are going to be in our membership and network, so that would be good too, because it's really getting the word out and people feeling that change, because it's been really tough on many all over, and we're all watching it, and you've done is awesome. Mm-hmm.
No, thank you so much, Natalie. It's absolutely fantastic sharing with you and with your audience. And I do hope and I do pray that we can move forward, and we can work for the unity of humanity to make those better decisions to make our lives worthwhile. I just had a birthday. I feel significantly old in
Happy
a numerical
birthday.
Perspective. Thank you so much.
No, you're not. You're not old. You're very young.
Going...
And it's. You'd like to what?
No. I'd like to go backwards.
No, we're at the end there. Now you're going forward. They said in the next 20 years we may be hitting 100, right? Rather than just 75 or 80 being the new time. So it's going to take a lot of change, and I think it's happening. I thank God for you and what you're doing and the efforts you're putting into it, because you're amazing, and everybody really needs to read your book. It's called The Capitalist's Worst Nightmare Come True, Crucifixion of Capital by Richard Kernicke, and so thank you. I hope to talk to you soon, and to everybody out there, I wish you peace.
Absolutely. The same for me. Thank you so much, Natalie.
Welcome.